listen to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting it, passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Oh, good. Hi, guys. Oh, my God. It feels like it's been so long.
Wait, before we begin, Katie,
yeah.
Your romper is adorable. That's
Thanks.
All I have to say.
Thank you.
I love that.
This is one of the ones that I drove 4 states to get.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. When I told you this, I think, but maybe not. When I went back to California, I was like, I have 2 main agenda points. 1, visit California and all my friends that I love. 2, go to that boutique in Temescal Alley and get 4 more of these jumpers because I have 2 and I need more.
No, you didn't tell us that. It was Pete's was your main goal.
Oh, right. And Pete's, of course. So I go to the store. I go to the boutique in Temescal Alley and I walk in and they have not. I was like worried. You know, it's been like years now since I bought these. So I'm like, they're not going to fucking have them. They had 9 new colors. It was heaven on earth. I told the lady, I just drove across from Colorado to here, to Oakland, California, to buy these. She was like, I'm sorry, what? Then the lady who makes them, whose store it is, walked in. And I was like, you're not going to believe it. I just drove here from Colorado to purchase this that you made with your hands. And she was like, that's fucking amazing. She was a little calmer about it than I wanted her to be.
No bulk discount or super fan special. She didn't give you a super fan special.
I was like, I drove 8 hours yesterday and 8 hours today. 2 agenda points. One of them was your fucking product and you're not jumping off the roof with excitement. But then I have friends who remind me all the time. I have 2 friends in Michigan who I talk about a lot. One of whom always says to me, Katie, you have to remember that in this reality, in 3D reality on human earth, enthusiasm is really not supported and not understood. Like people who are enthusiastic are like weirdo outcasts.
I will also add that it is not the expression of enthusiasm does not look the same to what we think it will be. Especially like, I think I've told the story about working for this one company that had a French CEO and they were super not like, yeah, about all the stuff we were doing. So we thought they hate us. And then after several times, but they kept inviting us back. They're like, they clearly loved our work. So we kept doing it. But every time they'd be like, okay, good. Yeah. What's next? And we realized instead of like, oh, that was really fun. I feel it in my body or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, what's next? Oh, cool. And then we finally, the penny dropped to like, oh, they're French. And that is a specific like Parisian, especially like vibe of like, it's not, we're not judging you by going, uh-huh. We're just not going to be falsely like, oh, hey, how's it going? Like you have to really earn that level of enthusiasm. They're actually being incredibly polite and present.
I hear that. I think what I'm getting at is that the expression in an exuberant, over-the-top, bubbly way that is actually authentic for some of us.
Right, exactly.
It's not the thing that you go, what a cool individual that was. Like we meet the Parisians and go, oh, they don't express things. They're very cool. You meet me and you go, she needs to take lithium.
Right.
And I don't. I just an 8.
Yeah.
You know, side note, I recently was interacting with, in the Christlight retreat I just led, which, holy Christ, am I still processing that? We realized there were 2 of my students that were in there who are also 8s with a 7 wing. And I have, which is fun because I sort of identify that way a little bit, but I also have spoken with Rami many times since then about the Enneagram and just like, Rami's helped me really own what I thought, which was that I am allowed to say I'm an 8 with 2 wings, an 8 with a 7 and a 9 wing. And I even was articulating to Rami, I think yesterday, that I was saying, excuse me, in a voice memo, like in my 20s, I really leaned heavily into that 7, like a lot. And then with all the trauma and all the stuff I needed to work out about being an 8, all the work I did has pushed me to lean into the 9. So I've been really 8 with a 9 wingy for a long time now. And then lately with that trip I took and just with some shifts that have happened, I've been like feeling balanced, feeling like, Yeah, I'm definitely an eight who has a nine and a seven wing. And mm-hmm. they're both active and they're both available. And it feels sort of like, oh, I see. And Rami was explaining for the listener, in case this is useful to anyone else, that actually, I guess in the old school, I may quote this incorrectly, the teachers who originally blah, blah, blah about the Enneagram, that was their whole thing, is that we have access to all the energies of all the colors of all the rainbow, but B, like whatever's on your left and right is going to be present in your reality.
Yeah.
Not like, right? Is that how you understand it?
Yeah. And I mean, and then you also have the two arrow points that are also different. So it's like you have access to like almost all the points, but like two of them, like depending on your configuration in the triangle. But yeah, and I can see, like, I definitely see, in fact, I feel like I identify more with the wings than I do with the points of the area, the directions of travel. Like I've definitely been a three with a two wing for a really long time, but now I'm becoming much more aware of my four wing, like being, you know, my feelings are special and all those things like that, like really digging into that part of the four, and not always the healthiest parts of the four, but definitely seeing aspects of fourdom come out.
I see. Yeah. It's so interesting how it all happens. When I was like describing it to Rami in a sort of past tense, like I noticed looking back, it was kind of like this and kind of like that. And they said, well, that's exactly what they teach you you're supposed to do. And I go, how funny that I didn't intend that. I wasn't looking at the Enneagram that closely. It's more that, and this is just like my point of view, obviously, it's more that like my framing of what that would quote unquote mean would be that if you're following a spiritual path and like taking direction, it's going to lead you through the way you're supposed to grow. It's just, right. you might not like mentally have language for it in the way that the Enneagram gives you. But how interesting is that, that I can look back retrospectively and go, well, first it was kind of 70 and now it's more 890 and then it's integrated. And Rami said, yeah, that's what they literally tell you to do.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that was cool to discover.
Yeah, it makes sense that ultimately the goal is to actually be all types, you know, in a sense, like have all of the superpowers of all of the types, right, to draw upon.
I think for me, the language is like, my point of view is that I want to integrate all of my human stuff that needs integrating so that I'm whole. And then I want to live as my higher self to the greatest degree possible, coming from that wholeness. And so I guess inside of wholeness, it would make sense that we would each have, if you're whole, right, you could have access to whatever you need, I guess.
Yeah.
Whatever energies are required in the moment, in your own flavor, in your own way. Yeah. Anyway, and more than ever, I'm just like really aware of, and for the listener, in case we edit this so that we started later, I just came off of four healing sessions back to back. So I'm plus my own work yesterday and my own work 2 days before that. So I'm like super tranced out and in a lot of dimensions right now. I feel like I could start channeling as we're talking, but just more and more, I'm really getting this thing of how there are universal truths. And then the way that those universal truths get activated and expressed and the way that humans make decisions based on them is super unique to the individual and not universal at all. So like the paradox of there's a unique you that literally can't be replicated and that has to function according to its own truth is really, really true. And simultaneously folded in with that, which makes me think of our Desmond conversation, I'll get right back to that, is the fact that there are these universal truths that are true for everyone. So like the paradox of that is happening every moment. And last night, Desmond, you were heavily referenced I was just at a friend's house here, of two people, me and another person. You were referenced heavily at that event. And I was talking to my friend TJ about the time-space folding thing that we were getting in the episode where we were asking about how many human bodies there are on the planet. My friend TJ happens to be someone who's like very, like, she's the kind of person who like in a normal, you're talking about like I don't know, the fence she built to keep her horses in. And some, and then all of a sudden you're talking about a dimension where you're best friends with a crow. And she, that's like, she's just in and out of different dimensional realities and has access to that shit all the time. She's amazing. She's also someone who like designs high-end apps, and Steve Jobs knows her, and she makes incredible, she has like clients as a designer that are huge corporation. Like she could do everything. You know, those people that are just like high functioning, high capacity people who also are like, oh, by the way, I'm a tripped out weirdo and I see dead people.
You know, I don't know anybody like that. Oh.
Anyway, she blows my mind. And we were talking about that thing of the folds in space and time. And as soon as she was so with me on it, I would be like, so on the podcast, we were saying, and Desmond was asking. And as soon as I posed the question, she said, right out of her mouth, she said, well, some of them are new. Like when I said, if right, which is the first thing we got. And then I go, that's what we got. And then I go, and then the next thing we got was, and she goes, also time and space don't function the way we think it does. And I go, that's the next thing. And so she's just like living with these awarenesses. And I go, how did you get access to all this? And she's like, I did a lot of LSD when I was younger. And I'm like, I can continually am fascinated by the ways that drug use, like psychedelics, whether it be plant-based or not, does give people access to multidimensional truisms that apparently the Christ light also gives you access to. Like, I did not think that doing a Christ light retreat, you know, just to remind people listening, we're not talking about the Christ of a religion. We're talking about the Christ light. It's an energy that human beings then formed a religion around and codified and made rules about. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the light, the Christ light. Anyway, I didn't think that transmitting that light for 4 days would open the quantum entanglements and break the veils of reality. I thought it would be not that. So it's just very interesting to learn how, like, when you think about, what was his name? He recently died. One of the guys from the 70s who went to India and came back and became a really popular teacher.
Timothy Leary?
Not him, but of that time.
Right.
Not
Ken Kesey?
No. Oh, no. He wrote, oh, no. Wait. Let me just find it because it'll drive me crazy.
Thomas Wolfe? Aldous Huxley? I'm just going to name...
They're not writer. He's not a writer. Oh, okay. He's more of a spiritual teacher. Hold on. Sai Baba, but like two names. Ray.
Kurzweil.
70s guru died recently, but he wasn't a guru. 70s psychedelic studier. What's his name? People is Ram Dass.
Oh, yeah. Duh.
My God.
One of the good ones. One of the ones who never turned sour or sad or evil or oppressive.
And didn't like rape children.
No, did none of those things.
No sex slaving.
Yeah, all good stuff. Really good. Really good person.
Hugs and love and light. Ram Dass. So Ram Dass, a lot of stuff he was teaching and that he brought back from the Maharaji, that guy.
Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi.
One of those guys. That the guy he followed was a saint, technically. What I'm trying to get at is that Ram Dass brought back those teachings and then stayed on that path in a really clean way and got to the value of psychedelics. Like they all feed each other. And it's just the question of, like, from my teachings, like the lineages I come from, they talk about the danger of psychedelics is that they open your field to everything. So if you're not spiritually aligned yet and you're not super clean, when you get open to everything, you can be influenced both by the light and the truth and the way, and also like the dark and the confusion and the entities and the demons. And so if people don't have a teacher guiding them or a path that they're sticking to pretty rigorously, you can really be pulled in some scary, dark directions. And so it's not that it's bad. It's that you need to just know what's what and not just be fucking around on your own, which is what our whole culture is about now. Like, I do what I want. I fuck around on my own. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Anyway, I just find it fascinating how those worlds overlap and how there's how they overlap. I'm just fascinated by it. What's your experience, Cass, with psychedelics? Have you spent much
time? It's pretty minimal, I'll be honest. I have a whole long personal history with sort of avoiding, in my early life, avoiding any kind of substances, alcohol, pot. I was just, but it was purely fear-driven, like 100% fear-driven, that like, oh, I don't know what'll happen. I don't know. I can't lose control. So I didn't do anything for a long time. My parents did. And there was also that. There was nothing to rebel against. So it was always like, you know, when I was a kid, I remember like my parents are going to hate that I'm telling them this, but I would like pass a joint from one. I would carry it across the room. Like, be like, oh, I'll take the joint. But maybe there's something illegal that happened there, but I don't give a shit. yeah. But like, I have a memory of doing that. And it was always very chill. And there was always, hey, have you gotten high yet? You know, when I was older and I was like, yeah, not yet. I'm like, cool. So there was just no energy around it. It just didn't, it was not a big deal to, but then I had a lot of fear around doing it. So it took a long time.
What did you think would happen?
I can't lose control. I don't know what'll happen. So like the first time I got stoned finally, and of course I was in Sonoma State and everybody's fucking getting stoned. And I was in the theater department. They're all getting stoned. Everybody's constantly. But I didn't do it. And everybody was cool about it. No one pressured me. But then I was able to smoke weed for the first time at a party at my house. So like I was safe.
Okay.
And I was surrounded. I didn't have to drive anywhere. I didn't have to go anywhere. I was, you know, like I knew all, like I had all the safety. It was a very sick thing. Like I set up all of the safety parameters.
Right.
How and then we did improv games. And I remember doing an improv game that involved a teeny tiny horse. Like we were doing a scene on our knees, like just crawling around the floor, like referencing this teeny tiny horse.
Oh, man.
And we thought it was genius.
I bet but you did.
That's not what you're asking. Later on, some psychedelics, still never done acid. I've done ecstasy and mushrooms and enjoyed them, but like so irregularly, like I could probably count the number of times I've done either of those substances. And it would be like under 20.
What happened for you on mushrooms?
The first time I had a very light amount and I was on a trip. We were in the Grand Canyon actually on a rafting trip down the Grand Canyon. So on one of the days that we were staying over an entire day, we drank some mushroom tea and went on a hike. And I remember just that being just beautiful, but it was more just enhanced beauty. It didn't feel like I got taken anywhere. Like doors of perception didn't open.
Okay.
But other than that, my experience on mushrooms is always one of visual kaleidoscopy and a basic and a gentle sense of euphoria. And that's about it. Like I don't hallucinate or see. I mean, I see things in the sense that like the ground bubbles.
Right.
But it feels more like a kaleidoscoping of the visual field as opposed to, you know, something that's not there appearing.
I see.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yep. And so the whole time that it's happening for you, you're not like, you don't lose your sense of self and drifted to some other dimension. You're like, I'm aware of what's occurring. Oh, kaleidoscopic reality now.
Yeah.
Like that?
Yeah. It's very much just a sensation-based thing. Now with pot, sometimes if I smoke too much or it's the wrong strain, that's whatever the one I shouldn't be doing. I have a disassociative experience, but it's within my own self. Like I go deeper into the caverns of my own perception. Like, so I feel like I go into my own skull. Like I don't go to a higher realm. I go into a cave that is located inside my own skull.
How is that dissociative?
'Cause it's hard for me to connect to the world, to what is literally outside the frame of my body.
Oh, so
people will just be like, I'll just be like, I need to say something to that person. How long has it been since I said something? And it's fun when it's fun. And then it crosses over into I'm trapped at the end of this long foggy tunnel and I can't reach out of it. And yeah, it's a weird feeling. So yeah, the most psychedelic experience I've ever had has actually been on weed, like a really powerful strain or something.
Do you have different experiences if you're smoking versus tincture versus gummies?
Probably, I don't know. Those were probably all smoking. The ones that I can remember that were actually like intense, that were like, took me to a place where I was like, I can't deal. Almost so all of those have been smoking.
I'm hearing you say that weed just doesn't really work for you.
It's such a delicate balance. If I can get the exact right, perfect experience, then I can like lie around and have sex for 4 hours. And, you know, it's awesome. Or I can connect to one person and we're engaged and it feels good. Yeah. But if I tip just a little over, then I go to the underneath place or whatever. It really does feel kind of like the Get Out underneath place.
Yeah, where that's you're like, called, what did he call it? The not underneath. Ah, what's the term?
We got Desmond on it.
The sunken place.
The sunken place.
Yeah. I really related to that because it's a place where you can see what's out there, but you can't quite.
Yeah.
It feels almost like a ghost. Like when the ghost is in movies, when the ghost is like, I'm trying to talk to you, but it can't. And the people are just in the room going, what's going on? I don't see anything.
Oh, wow. You know what I love about what just happened? Can we just acknowledge for a second? I will say to people, could you Google we'll be talking like Alfred and I'll be going somewhere. I'll be like, can you Google where we're going? And he'll be like, well, you're sitting by the laptop. And I'll be like, let me explain. When I try to Google things, it should be like, okay, we're going to go see a movie, the name of the movie theater, the city I'm in, Oakland Movies Times. And I wind up with something about Nebraska and chickens and starting a farm. And I'm like, why can't I find the movie theater that's right next door? The easiest thing that everyone in the world knows how to do, which is just Google stuff, I am a failure at. Like just now, I had so much fun being like, movie, falling, black people. Like, I
can't. You just had no.
It should be so intuitive and organic. I'm so bad at it. And even when I hit no one will believe me when I say this, but nobody will. You can't. I wouldn't believe me if I were you. I'll type in exactly what you type in. Nothing.
It'll just laugh at you. It'll give you back a bunch of it'll just Rickroll you repeatedly. Never going to let you down. Why is everything I Google never going to let you down?
Now you're talking. That's how it goes. I don't know why. But anyway, when I came back from being gone for 3 weeks, my town is a whole different universe. Like first of all, spring happened while I was gone. It turned into spring and everything's green and there's deer everywhere and everything's beautiful, rolling hills, blue skies again. And I'm like, wow, okay, sure. And people are like, we're good with masks. Never mind. Because in Montezuma County, my county, some government person said, like, we're relaxing the restrictions. We trust you. And I'm like, you guys are idiots, but okay. And so people just don't give a flying fuck wad, except for some people. No, masks outside, I get that. That makes sense. And the CDC, and then there's probably like, haven't we also heard that there was sort of technically close to herd immunity or something?
No, in fact, we're nowhere near it.
Oh, really?
And they're kind of saying it's not likely, at least the article I was reading, it's really unlikely we will reach it because not enough people are getting, will get, because a significant number of the people won't get vaccinated that we need that in order to get herd, because herd immunity will not occur naturally. It must be forced through immunization.
Huh.
Yeah. Okay. This is one article I read, but.
Well, and then I go, see, to me, it's like, I don't know, man, because I'm not currently vaccinated. I'm like, I believe I need to be extra responsible and be pretty on top of my mask game, because that just makes logical sense.
Yeah. And then you don't want to spread it.
Yeah. A, I don't have it. I get tested all the time. But B, if I, just in case I do, I'm not going to be a dick and just be like, whatever, deal with me, world. But I'm surprised too that people, a lot of people are getting vaccinated, A, we know the research about it doesn't mean you're 100% safe.
Right.
B, not everybody's vaccinated and you don't know who the fuck isn't. C, you know, so it all just seems like, wear the fucking mask when you're out in public. It's not that, right?
Right.
No, pretty simple.
But I know I don't have it, so I'm not going to wear my mask.
Okay. All right.
That's That's the standard. That I think that's the main problem that people just disconnect from. Like, yeah, disconnect from the sort of not personal bubble, but the version that includes the collective.
I mean, I'm saying this with like, wait, this is sane, right? Behind what I'm saying, because I'm going, that seems quite simple and rational. How are we, right? Or am I, because the world is not behaving that way around me, I'm sort of like, what did I miss?
Right.
And then I'm like, oh, nothing.
People, well, I mean, there's even versions of ones where people say, oh, no, wearing a mask makes you sick because you're sucking in your own breath all day and then you're reinfecting yourself. It's like, that's just literally not how that works. So that's, I don't know what to tell you.
That's not science. There's no science in that.
That's just...
Good times. Okay, so if we were going to open... I have these cards here and they want to be used. I don't know what for yet.
Mm.
And if we were to open the records... what do we feel pulled towards? I'm looking at options. A, we could open all three of us. That's a no. B, we could look at the collective. That's a no. C, you like how I'm involving you in this decision?
Hey, I love it. Sometimes it's just like, I don't know, what do you want to tell us today?
Yeah.
But yeah. Is it the collective? Oh, you're saying not the three of us, also not the big collective, as in humanity. Is it Katie? Is it Desmond individually? Is it Cassidy individually? Is it Katie individually?
No, no. Our families, our friends, humans, Earth. Oh, that reads.
Dog? Hey,
Earth.
No.
Earth. Okay. Does the Earth want to say things? Yes. Okay. Is there healing available for us through opening the records of the Earth? Yes, yes, yes. Big yes. Useful insights? Yes. Okay. So then who are these cards for? Is that for us when we're in the records? Yes. So we're going to open the records of the Earth and then pull cards for individually all three of us. Yes, if you want. Okay, that's fun.
I just remembered something else. If we don't mind one slide, unless if you want to go right in, that's totally fine. But I have a thing that I was reminded of. So we did this re-release last week, right? An episode that had gotten taken down for technical reasons and finally got around to fixing it and putting it back up. So it was like a little bit, that was last week's episode. And I got messages from a couple of people like Rami and someone else. They were like, you should listen to this for sure. And my point being, it is super interesting to listen to an old episode that tells you something about what your next steps are or where you should be putting your attention.
Oh.
But from the point of view of 6-7 months in the future.
And what was the episode giving us? Who is it?
It was all personal. It was mostly me and Desmond, I think. Yeah, there was some stuff for Desmond and there was some stuff for me. And I was given the message like, yo, you should listen to this because it's super interesting.
Oh, wow. Did you?
And then like Denise listened to it and she was like, yeah, I am not dating that version of you at all. That is not the person I am with right now.
Wow.
And I was like, I couldn't quite get what they were saying as fully as I think other people who love me and perceive me are getting it.
Yeah.
But I definitely loved the information that was coming through. So that my whole point just being like, oh, go back and listen to some old episodes.
Yeah.
As the new human that you are.
Wow.
And just see what it tells you.
That's really cool and a great idea. I frequently have that experience with teaching this healing shit that I teach where I go, in a way, like my mind and my ego will say, I don't need to listen to myself talk. What am I? Who am I? You know? And then I listen and I go, oh my God, I need to write all this shit down. I don't know any of that.
Right.
I don't know that shit.
I haven't done any of the things I'm telling y'all to
do. No. But also like more like concepts and tying things together and ways of viewing reality will come through that I'm like, right. In my sort of normal waking time, which is, I don't even know what that means anymore. But anyway, when I'm in a more egoic, contracted place, it's, I don't remember that shit. And I need to hear it as much as the next guy. In fact, I've always said that, like, you know, I don't know that spiritual teachers on planet Earth are spiritual teachers for any reason besides they need it themselves the most.
Right.
Like, I mean, you don't make somebody teach a thing unless they need to learn that thing over and over in new ways and over. you know, like we teach what we need to learn. And like, it doesn't diminish the value of what I'm giving to others, but it does like keep me humble and make me go like, I have this ability to transmit high level information, but that doesn't fucking, that's like a thing I have to try and do a thing to make it happen. And, you know, so it's humbling and it keeps me right-sized, at least more right-sized than I would be otherwise. Speaking of right-sized, and then let's go into the records of the earth. I wanted to talk about this concept. I want to hear your thoughts on this, Cass, and also just throw this out for the listeners, which is that, so right-sized is like a 12-step term where they talk about like most people who come into addiction recovery are like 99% of people coming into addiction recovery. It might actually be more like 85, but like a high number are struggling with a certain degree of narcissistic wounding, where you, the less generous way of framing that would be to say addicts are narcissists and they need to heal and integrate their narcissism to be well. And that part of what the 12 steps do is quote unquote, right size your ego to where you come back down to reality and you go, okay, I'm not the biggest thing in the world. And I'm also not the biggest piece of shit in the world. And there's a saying in 12 step where they say narcissists, AKA addicts are, think of themselves as the biggest piece of shit the world revolves around.
Right.
Right. The other version is I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. And so I've noticed in life that a lot of people can identify with that, not just addicts. Like,
yeah,
it's a pretty common paradigm that people are working with. And psychologically, the way to frame that is like, or a way to frame it is everybody has some narcissistic wounding, unless you have like perfect parents who descended from heaven and gave you the perfect balance, whatever, bullshit, whatever. Which, by the way, Alfred fucking had. Fucking fuck that guy.
Wait, I thought I had the best parenting. Wait a minute.
I know.
He can't be better than me. Damn it.
No, it's really going to activate that three, isn't it? You're like, mom and dad, get your shit together.
Retroactively be even more awesome than you were.
Oh, God. I have to say, it makes me feel grateful. Like, I'm doing something okay if you two are surrounding me. That's really sweet. Like, you did have magic unicorn parents. And so did he. What the fuck? Anyway. Narcissistic wounding.
I miss calling him Manfred Newmanson. Let's
just call him that. Me too. Let's call him that.
I think you should call him that in bed too, but that's on you.
Newman Manfredson.
Anyway, go on. Sorry, back to narcissistic wounding.
No, you're fine. So point being, right-sizedness. There's a way that the first like 10, 15 years of getting sober, like when people are sober, you're getting right-sized down. And then there's this turning point where you have to learn, I believe, how to right size up, meaning they teach you that like, it's just as self-centered and narcissistic to think you're terrible and small as it is to think you're like the biggest, hottest shit in the universe.
Right.
So to me, right sizing has to do with really owning the vastness of what you're capable of, in conjunction with hopefully profound humility at the center of it. In other words, I have this vision for myself where it's that I'm trying to live more and more into, where it's like, I understand that everything I'm good at, everything I'm given, everything I'm naturally talented with, everything I can do easily, everything I help people with, whatever, all of it is given. It's not because I'm the doer. It's like, I was born with certain abilities and my job is to live into them. I didn't like as an infant go, I shall will myself to be good at these things. I'm just that way.
Right.
And I think that my spiritual job, the whole point of being on a path is both to grow and get bigger and touch more people and do more useful things and be bigger and bigger and bigger. And at the same time, be deepening into the understanding of the humility of where it all comes from, which is not my ego. That's not where it comes from. You know, anyway, that's my spiritual vision for myself. And I've been thinking a lot about right sizing lately in the bigger direction because I'm feeling really called and pulled to expanding a lot of things I'm doing. And like my like assistant is helping me build all these, we're building all this stuff online and including like doing a bunch of research for the podcast. She lives in the Philippines, by the way, and like knows a lot about you two and is like researching, like, how do we get this to more people? And how does sponsorship work? And she's like on it. I have her like on it because I'm starting to really like grok in the cells of my body slowly. How I want to say out of alignment or like injured or narcissistic it is to play small. And I know that that's like a popular thing to say from like the coaching world. People are all into like, are you afraid to shine your light? Your greatest fear is your light, not your hand. And that's like words people throw around a lot.
Well, I mean, if you say it like that, it's shitty, but the reality is still what you're saying is good.
No, yeah. That's true. The thing I'm making fun of or what I'm intending to kind of mock is that I think that a lot of people say that, they say it not understanding the humility piece, I think. And so there's a way that it gets turned into just another justification to be a dick.
To be egoic and,
yeah.
And pushy.
I don't know. Something.
Yeah, it has to still come from an integrated place. You have to be genuinely shining your light, not from a place of, I'm pushing my light. So you can't be like cranking your light out. You have to be.
Right.
It has to be, you have to be willing to just, okay, now I'm here to share what I. And it's hard to know the difference, unfortunately.
Well, and I'm speaking, I think, a little more specifically to the notion of shine the light, but then give credit where credit is due. In other words, your light is a gift you have, not your light means you're better than other people.
Right.
It means you may have something to offer people in a way that really makes them happy and is exciting. And you might be better at that thing than other people are.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you, in your essence, in your soul, are superior to other people.
Exactly. This is a thing I get into with my coaching when we talk about people say, I want to get more confident. And I try and take that word off because I'll say confidence to me indicates a power dynamic. I am lording over you. I am standing here firmly, power poses, which puts you in a not in relationship to your audience, right? But I like to do a thing comes from actually from Meyerhold and biomechanics, where you just say, you do some visualizations and some connecting, and then you just say, I love my spot. And you just land in that space. And to me, it's a very powerful tool. And sometimes I have to talk about it more. But my point is, what I talk about is this sort of gratitude for the circle of what this is. Like, I am so glad you're here to hear, to witness what I have to share. And boy, you are so lucky that I'm here to share this awesome stuff with you. But it's not like, I wouldn't have anybody to share it with if you weren't here. So you fucking A, you're awesome that you're here.
Yeah.
But it's not that I am awesome to be bringing this to you. It's just saying like, oh, I have a gift for you and you are a gift to me to be there to receive it. Like that is also a gift to me.
I would even add to that as a teacher in the context, I think you're talking about coaching and teaching and leading people. There's also like, you get to that place with teaching where they go, where it's like, I mean, all day when I'm teaching, they're teaching me. There's so much they give me that I then take and use and apply. So it really is a back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's not a concept they give me that I go, I learned that new concept. But what I often get in teaching is a way of being. Like people will reflect, how do I say, people will be a certain way in a circle, in a group, and I'll learn from the way they're being how I want to be being. Or they'll respond to something I offer in a way that I go, I'm going to respond that way too next time when someone gives me something.
Yeah.
Like I'm always watching people, how they operate, and I'm also learning how to be a more effective leader teacher person by how people respond to me when I'm leader teaching.
Yeah.
Cause if something's off, it's like in somebody, or let's say like half the group is not getting it. It's like, okay, what do I need to look at here, adjust to get to be more effective here? You know what I mean? Which I feel like is a teaching for me.
Yeah. Do you ever learn from yourself in a moment? Do you ever say something? Have you had the experience where you go like, oh, damn, good. Wow.
Awesome.
What I just said was awesome.
All the time.
But it is in that sense. It's like, yeah, we can call that ego stroke and like, yeah, me. But you can also be like, wow. Okay. I want to write that down. Will someone write that down? Because I just learned it.
That comes back to exactly what we're talking about of like, that was cool. I like that I said that. I clearly did not invent it because it's coming through me and surprising me.
Right.
Which means there's some kind of forces in the universe that are coalescing through my face hole to make these words happen. That if I were to, like, you know, but let's come back to the right sizing idea. It's not that we don't pat ourselves on the back and we don't feel esteem and we don't feel, wow, I feel good doing this. That's important to feel. But when we take it to, like, I'm awesome and better than other people, and they should feel smaller than me, superiority, ego, that's the problem. So there's a way that right-sizedness includes being like, God, that was great. I feel activated. I feel like I'm doing my right work. I feel enlivened.
Yeah. Flow.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right.
Well, speaking of gifts that we might receive through your face hole.
Let's open those records of the earth and see what it wants to give us. I'm just listening to see. Okay. Well, let's do it. Here we go. You know what? Do you mind just letting me pee real quick? Okay. I'll be right back. Thanks for your patience.
It's all good.
Pee-pee time.
Pee-pee time. Katie Rubin.
Hey.
Hey.
Okay.
And boop, edit point.
All right, let's do it. Here we go. Here we go. Oh, my God. No idea what's going to happen. No idea, living into the mystery. Building a mystery. What was that song? Okay.
Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah.
Love that album.
Right? I mean, it never
wore it out, and it was a CD. So, you know.
You know, you could buy a new CD. Nah.
What are those? What do I play it on?
God, do people,
my car. Do people I could play it in my car. That's it.
Can you sell it? Do people sell CDs?
Yeah, CDs are still out there. People still print them, I think, for albums.
Well, yeah, like you can go to Walmart and get a CD.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So let's close our eyes.
Fascinating.
And we'll take some breaths into the low belly. Yeah, and we'll just drop our energy inside, fully inside, becoming aware of the midline of the body from the base of the spine up through the middle of us, connecting to the low belly breath, allowing those low belly muscles to really relax and receive oxygen as we inhale. Allowing the belly to get fat, as I say, like let it out. Let it be chubbers, let it be seen, let it relax. And as we exhale, allowing the air to extend from the low belly through the mouth. And feeling into the bottoms of our feet. Hopefully the feet are in contact with the earth. And if they're not, we just imagine that they are. Keeping in mind that a great way to really get connected to the low belly breath, which brings us into contact with ourselves more intimately, is to exhale firmly through the lips, through pursed lips, as if through a straw. It's a really great way to control the oxygen flow. So anytime you feel disconnected from yourself, you can exhale a few times through the mouth, through pursed lips, as if through a straw, and the feet come flat on the ground. And we see those little foot chakras spin open at the bottom center of each foot, spinning and spinning, bigger and wider, until the whole surface area of the bottom of each foot is an open field of light. Like a window that's opened between the here, the body, and the there of the earth, allowing the electromagnetic field of us to commune more intimately with the electromagnetic field of the earth below us. Can you still hear me? Okay. And we'll visualize now our 500 energetic tree roots extending from the bottom of each foot, hundreds of miles into the earth. 1,000 roots extending from the base of our feet into the planet, hundreds of miles down, spreading left and right and forward and back the way tree roots do. Anchoring us to the here and now. seeing at the root chakra as that process continues, a grounding cord shoot from the base of your spine, a foot and a half wide, grounding cord shooting down to the center of the earth, anchoring itself at the center of the earth, allowing, as that anchoring occurs, a river of divine light to flow back up through that grounding cord into the root chakra, forward into each hip socket, forward into each quad, glute, hamstring, knee, calf, shin, ankle, and foot. A river of divine light up from this gorgeous, nurturing planet of ours, flowing down our legs into those roots that we established moments ago. And then we'll just see in our mind's eye that tripod grounding structure we've created. Roots from the left foot, roots from the right foot, root from the root, grounding cord, to the center of the earth. Nice three-pronged, interconnected tripod of grounding into the here and now. And from here, we do acknowledge the forces of light, asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Holy Spirit of God, protect me, please, from all forms of self-centeredness and direct my attention to the work at hand. Help me to know the earth. In the light of the Akashic records, help me to see Mother Earth, Sophia Gaia, through the eyes of the Lords of the records, and enable me to share the wisdom and compassion that the masters, teachers, and loved ones of Sophia Gaia, the soul of the earth, have for Sophia Gaia, the soul of the earth. And as we deepen into our connection to the Akashic records of the earth itself, we want to allow ourselves, each of us now listening, to feel into the third chakra, solar plexus, and allow ourselves to receive up through that grounding cord we established moments ago, the gifts and the spiritual alignment and the spiritual teachings and the spiritual river of light, the nourishing, healing river of light that the earth is constantly providing upwards for us. We want to actively be receptive through the root chakra, into the pelvic floor, into the third chakra, solar plexus, into the heart. And before we go to the heart, we'll just let that Allah, that light from the earth, bubble up through 1, 2, and 3 and sit there, bubbling, transmitting, healing, nourishing up through the third chakra. They're like pausing me before we go to the heart. Whew. And so as we deepen into the Akashic records of the earth, we're asking the Lords, Masters, and Teachers of the records of the earth to clear anything for each of us that would stand in the way of us receiving what she has to offer, receiving what she has to teach. We're asking for anything to be cleared, taken, uncreated, or destroyed, integrated, or relieved, dissolved, or dissipated, that keeps each of us in any way from being grounded and connected to this gorgeous planet, this Mother Gaia, this soul. Full being that we call the earth. Anything in each of us keeping us disconnected, we ask for it to be dissolved, eliminated, eradicated, dissipated. We open our first, second, and third chakras by relaxing and receiving. And as we deepen even further into the Akashic records, or you could say the spiritual alignment of the earth with its own spiritual essence. I'm asking just for anything the earth wants to share, soul of the earth, the essence of the earth, the spirit of the earth, with us, clueless, often lost and bumbling humans. If there's anything you desire us to know or understand, desire to transmit, desire to clarify, desire to gift. And as I say all those words, the only word that resonates is gift. And there's a feeling of, okay. You tend to think of the earth as this rock, the planet, the solid density upon which you sit. The earth is, in fact, an energetic vibrational portal of light through which healing occurs, awakening occurs, activation occurs, alignment occurs, nourishment occurs. Remember that you tend to attribute, some of you, the spiritual among you, the challenges you experience as being challenges of being on the earth. The challenges are not provided by the earth. The challenges are provided by the third dimension in which you function. 3D reality is the challenge you signed up for. Earth is, in fact, contributing divine light to facilitate healing for you, nurturance, guidance, direction, and love as you navigate the three-dimensional reality you inhabit. She is much more evolved, much more subtle energetically, much more less solid, more, fluid, light, like an acid trip, more like here, but not here, ephemeral, lucid, conscious, changing than you tend to think of her as. And so we're asking now for any activations she desires us to actively receive. Everything we tend to ignore that she's giving all the time. We open ourselves now to receive that healing, that guidance, that awareness, that connection to her essence, that grounding, and all the gifts of abundant flow and alignment that the earth is attempting to transmit at all times. We open ourselves to receive those now. And they're saying we can allow ourselves now to receive all of that up through 1, 2, 3 and into the heart and into the throat and into the center of the head and up through the crown. Understanding that as the divine light of the earth flows upward, the divine light of the heavens can flow more actively downward, and they mix where they meet in the heart center, the light of the infinite beyond, dropping down through the crown more easily and readily as the light from the earth below transmits upward. There are many awarenesses they're giving me, and I'm trying to sort through where to start. Okay, they want us, first we're going to talk about, let us talk about divine feminine, divine masculine. Understand, these are not the feminine and masculine of your reality where you go woman, man. These are the organic qualities occurring in nature of that which is receptive and that which is creative. When the divine feminine and the divine masculine are functioning together correctly, you have a kind of net neutral. You have access to all energies you require. The active energies are softened by the receptive energies, and the receptive energies are made active by the active energies. Such that if you once again visualize the infinity symbol, if you picture one half of the infinity symbol being like one S-shaped line within the infinity symbol being the divine masculine and the other S-shape being divine feminine, because they're connected in an infinity loop, those energies blur together and blend and become one unified field. And the unified field is the oneness or the unity that we refer to from the spiritual dimensions when we're trying to teach you about how to have peace in your life and in your heart. It's to bring your heart to the oneness of the unified field. And therein lies the peace you're seeking. Additionally, therein lies the right-sized, as you were discussing today, alignment of abundant flow and surrender, active action taking and waiting, beginning and resting, continuing and resting, completing and resting. Yeah. And I find myself, Katie here, I find myself wondering, like, are you being terribly affected by our behavior, human beings? No. You are being terribly affected by your terrible behavior. We are multidimensional conscious beings, the planets. Well, some planets are. I am one who is evolved to give nurturance, care, love, spring, fall, winter, summer, building, decaying, birth, death, rebirth. The sun shines on it all. The sun being the divine masculine representation, and my changing nature being the divine feminine embodiment. The sun is the container for life. Life is ever flowing, ever changing. A river flows. The banks of the river are the divine masculine. The river itself is the divine feminine. Embodied on this planet. Similarly, all the changes you witness on the earth, winter, spring, summer, fall, are facilitated by the waxing and waning of the moon and the shining and not shining of the sun. So the moon and the sun represent the divine masculine containers that make possible the divine feminine embodiment of life on earth. And I find myself wondering, this is me, Katie, wondering, so is that the nature of life on other planets? No. And so why is Earth set up this way? Why? In other words, if there are conscious light beings, let's say, who live in other dimensions or on other planets, who don't have to do things like till the soil and hunker down in the winter and up and down and change, why do we do that here? Seems like a lot of extra work when we could just ascend and be light. I'm just listening now. Where was I the other day? Oh, right. Okay. There. Similarly, so the other day, this is just me sharing. The other day, I was on a hilltop in Bluff, Utah, camping with Newman Manfredson. And we opened the records, his records, and we received the awareness that part of the purpose of Earth and the gift of Earth is that as an Earth person, as a creature, human being, when you choose to, because you have the power of choice, and because you live in a realm of duality, and because you live where you can easily choose to serve the darkness or to serve yourself or serve the light or grow or not grow, integrate or not integrate, heal or not heal, transcend or not transcend, awaken or not awaken, because you choose, the power of the result of what you've chosen is greater on your ascension journey or on your soul's path, you could say. So as the soul is choosing to go forward, as it were, in time space, it's also choosing whether to function from a higher frequency or not. And the choices that it makes in each incarnation inform what happens in the next incarnation and so on and so forth. And so choice is in fact the greatest, the most powerful tool you have. What you do with your choice is everything on this earth. In certain other dimensional realities, it's almost like there are fewer choices available, because by the time you're living at that, in those realities, you've already made certain foundational choices that have changed the nature of your being. Such as, like, you know, you have fewer, there are fewer choices left because you've already decided to be a certain frequency, to be a certain light, to be a certain energy. Okay. So here, in this dimensional realm, you have access to the earth light and the divine light and consciousness itself, the quantum entanglements, and you get to choose whatever you want. There's infinite choice. And so when you choose for that which propels you forward, because you have every choice available to you, it is more powerful on your soul's journey to choose to move forward here in this dimension than it is somewhere else. Think of it like the launching pad of a rocket ship. When you think of a Cape Canaveral rocket ship, the hardest, the most dangerous moment for the rocket ship is the moment of launch. Boom, the explosion, and the rocket goes into the sky. And once it has momentum and stability in the atmosphere at other altitudes, it's pretty much smooth sailing, but you've got to get through that launch. Similarly, when you have re-entry of a rocket ship back into your atmosphere, that's another danger zone. Notice that both the launch moment and the re-entry moment have to do with friction. Pushing a rocket into like the speeds that rockets function from at their highest speed, from nothing, stillness. A rocket is still sitting there on the dock, right? Nothing is happening. It's inert. And then all of a sudden it's going however many hundreds of thousands of miles or however fast they go. That transition from inert or stationary, we should say, it's not inert, it's stationary, to that fast, to those speeds, is tremendous, the transition. Similarly, this is how the human soul operates on Earth. The momentum required. Whew, this touches my heart. The momentum required to lift off in your life into a next dimensional frequency, to elevate your consciousness, to move forward in time space with your life and your choices and your spirit. That is massive momentum. Why? Because you're functioning against gravity. You're functioning against the gravity of the cultural beliefs, the gravity of the stigma of moving forward, the gravity of breaking outside of the structures of normalcy, the gravity of literal gravity, the gravity of your fear of exploding interdimensionally into some other form. What does it mean? What will it be like? So understand, you're working against so much friction that we, that let's say, that when you manage to break free from any limitation, any small, teeny, tiny limitation, you have transcended time and space. You have rocket launched yourself from stationary to rapid forward momentum. Never discount the smallest moment of progress forward. And this brings us back to your discussion earlier of right sizing. This is where we are pointing Katie's consciousness, that understand that, when you feel good about succeeding at transcending a limitation, this feel good that you experience is the celebration of succeeding. It's the celebration of progress. You should feel good when you manage to succeed at any small task on Earth because of the gravity, the weight of gravity on your body, the weight of the gravity of the cultural projections around you in every single moment. No accomplishment is small. Every accomplishment is witnessed, experienced, and received by the one, by the realm of non-duality that we spoke of earlier. And so your job, should you choose to accept it, is to align your mental conscious attention to the celebration we're already throwing for you when you succeed at what you call small tasks. We, in consciousness, we leap for joy, metaphorically speaking. We celebrate every forward motion moment. You, however, dismiss them. You dismiss them all. Oh, it's just, I just put the kid's socks on. Yeah, the kid didn't have socks on before, though. And now the kid does. Without you, there's no socks. And that's bleeding feet. And that's a hard day. It matters. And so right-sizing yourself with the all that it means to align your awareness of who you are with how we perceive you. We being the conscious awareness of the quantum entanglements at the realm of the all that is. Okay, consciousness itself is aware of you. Will you choose to be aware of it is the question. And it's all right if you do not. You have another lifetime and another lifetime to figure it out. And so back to your question, are you harming us? It's almost hilarious to us when you ask this. You're harming your ability to exist in this form sometimes on this planet. You're making it harder for yourself to do the work you came to do. I'm just listening. I'm wondering, like, can we kill ourselves off as a race of humans? Like, could we actually, like, destroy the atmosphere enough that, you know, we die as a race? This is an interesting sensation. I get a no. But something's happening in my low belly, so I'm just waiting for it to finish happening to see what that turns into. Those who are going forward in consciousness, who are awakening, will continue to awaken. And those who desire not to will continue to sleep. Period. And they're showing me the image of, like, there's some dystopian futuristic movie, I can't remember the name of, that they're showing me, like, remember that still from that, what is that movie? District 9. Okay.
Yeah.
The image of, I don't know, the world then in that movie, there's a shot of, like, you see, like, really tall high rises, growing into the sky out of, like, trash heaps on the ground. You know, it's just like everything's a garbage dump, but then, like, high rises exist. And then there's, like, one dude who's, like, walking around with his spacesuit on the trash heap earth surface. But, like, most people don't live on the earth surface anymore. They live up in the high rises, or they've left to go to Mars or whatever. So they're showing me that. So I need to wait a moment. Because my own mind is like, I have all these narratives that are my own that are not right. So I'm just waiting to pass through that to see what they're showing me about that. So I just keep hearing this. Those who are going forward in consciousness will continue to go forward in consciousness, whether you're wearing a spacesuit on a trash mountain or living in Shangri-La on a green, green earth. So then I want to ask, like, does that mean that then, let's say we destroy, like, we turn the whole planet into a trash heap and humans can't survive here and we have to leave, or, like, whatever. Some people transcend time and space and most people die and da da da. Will the earth itself, the planet, the rock, you know, die as well? No. Will she sort of reanimate? Absolutely. Like, all the trash will sort of, I don't know, be somehow, what's it called, you know, recycled or go away somehow. Yes. Yes. So the movies where we have movies here where, you know, there's the sort of metaphor of, like, there's always some green, you know, what's it called, like a grass or a weed that starts to reform on top of, like, a shitty sidewalk that exists after the explosion goes off that kills all the people. So is that metaphor real? Yes. Life does find a way. that's Jurassic Park, I guess. Life finds a way. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's actually real. Now, you could explode the planet, you know, to bits. There, you could, you could create like enough. You could create enough huge explosives that you could detonate many, many, many of them. Huge, huge, what do you call them?
Nuclear bombs.
Nuclear arms. If you put, how many would we need? 60,000. Nope, more. 6 million. You could put 6 million nukes into the ground, deep enough into the ground. It's so funny for some reason.
They're giving us an instruction manual. Well, if you really want to blow us up.
Yeah, that's how you could like literally obliterate the rock of the planet. But it wouldn't matter because, or we should say it matters, but it wouldn't stop. It wouldn't stop consciousness from moving forward. Now, so then I go, would people still come? Like, would Earth School still exist? No, but there'd be another way that it would occur. Is that correct? Yes. Okay. So, right. And remember, they're also saying, it's like, remember, like, even if like your body blows up to bits, if your consciousness is where it needs to be, to, you know, come back in another form, you will, that a form that can live wherever it's going to live. In other words, it's not like Earth life is the only option. So are there big galactic, this is me, universal consequences to us destroying the planet? No. Well, that's interesting. It's your choice. It's a choice. Consciousness carries on. Now, were you to choose to live in harmony with the beauty that the Earth is providing, that will create a different outcome. You could argue a more pleasant one. But to be honest with you, there will be challenges with that outcome as well. There's no escaping challenge. When a soul is attempting to move forward in consciousness. Okay, questions from you guys, if you have any. I got all mine answered.
Is there a non Earth option for humans? Hmm. Like, could we actually survive on another planet, or is that just a huge band-aid?
Well, I have this like huge no. My head, I like can't move my head away from this position, which is the no position. But now I'm just gonna wait, because there's gotta be more information than that, I'm assuming. That's not a popular thing to say. Wait, is there more information other than no? No. Okay. What about this whole Elon Musk, Mars? No, 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 no. Well, that's it. Yeah, I'm not getting anything else on that. I don't know what's happening. It's just no. You want to ask more, maybe? I can't even move my fucking head.
Is it that we're an invasive species anywhere else? And it no. just we just can't?
No. That's a good question. No. Okay. It's more like this. Invasive species. Are we an invasive species? No. It's more like um you just can't do it. You're not strong enough. You're not, the human form needs this 3D body. You can't do it other places. You can't. You're not strong enough. You're not, strong is the wrong word. You're not made for it. It wouldn't work out.
That makes sense.
It's like throwing a squirrel in the ocean and being like, come on! Don't you want to survive?
I mean, the squirrel might find a lily pad or something to hang out on, but it's not the solution to his problem.
Yeah.
I have a question that's
also, it's like
more personal.
One squirrel might survive, but the race wouldn't.
Right. It's not the answer to our survival.
Yeah. Let me see.
I'm having a sensation that I want to check.
Okay.
Since the moment we went into the, started going into the records, just going into the meditation, I was seized with an aggressive, like sleepy, can't keep my head. I can't even keep listening to you. I keep just going away and like forcing myself back. It was aggressive.
Yeah.
And then you said the thing about some of us will be in consciousness and some of us will stay asleep. And I was like, fuck. I don't know if you can get any kind of read on what's going on.
I totally can.
Me.
It's very clear.
Yeah.
It's very clear.
It's been really hard. Like I have been struggling to even hear what you were saying today.
Okay. There's good news. Okay. This is good news. The sleep you are experiencing is the sleep of you being put out of your own way so that we can transmit. There are certain frequencies that are too non-mental for you to receive if you are awake right now. Mm. One day, after time, receiving more and more of these frequencies, you'll sleep, and one day you'll be awake for it. This is healthy, normal. We put you out for a reason.
Cool. So I didn't have to hear it with my conscious ears.
Correct. Now let us see if we can facilitate. Can you, for a moment, this is wacky, but can you allow yourself to kind of go there again?
I mean, I could just chill out and listen.
No, I mean, could you go to that sleepy place?
Yeah. I mean,
okay, go there.
That's what I mean.
Go there now.
I'll try.
Yeah, just try.
Of course, it's just like sleeping. When you try to sleep, you can't.
Uh-huh. I'll frame it another way. Hey, Earth, divine light of Earth, will you transmit for Cassidy now? And whether he sleeps or not, we'd like to continue whatever activations were occurring for him that put him to sleep. That's good. And whether you sleep or not, don't worry, it's irrelevant. They are rewiring your brainstem such that you can have easier access to the subtler realms, the meditative realms, the earth, space, spirit realms. Just receive, relax. And for those of you listening, if you fall asleep allow it and understand this is a common occurrence in the earlier stages of activating the, we should say, transmuting the mind into being an organism that serves the soul rather than an organism that drags the soul around. And so this transmission for Cassidy is being brought through for all of you who are receiving now, who are listening and receiving and feeling sleepy, tired, unconscious. Allow yourselves to relax and sleep, or rest or not rest. Trust, receive. Cassidy, what's happening for you now?
My eyes just snapped open right before you asked that question.
Yeah.
I felt like I dipped down into that space a little bit, mm-hmm. and really, I just tried not to analyze what I was perceiving. I tried not to, what am I noticing? What am I noticing? Because that's when my brain gets in the way. So I just kind of let go of trying to seize the experience.
Mm.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense.
So I didn't have anything that I can really report except that I'm, the sort of fog cleared a little bit, and it doesn't feel like an oppressive space. It was feeling almost like it was working a number on me before, and I was fighting it, and that was a struggle. And as soon as I stopped fighting it, it was easy.
Okay, cool. So here's what we know: that sleep thing is resistance. You do go to sleep because a part of you can't hang. So but also they're like, we are working on the resistance when you sleep. So it's just not wrong, because the resistance is okay. You know, we're clearing it anyway. So sleep, don't sleep, we're clearing it. And you choosing to be more present to the process is always great. Another thing to understand, this is for you and for several people listening. Oh, give me a moment. Something completing for you there. You having, let's say, it is perfectly. useful. Sorry, there's so much big energy clearing for you, Cassidy, in your grounding structure. Like the, it's hard for me to talk because it's still happening. I'm just gonna let it keep happening for a minute. If you could be present to from your heart all the way down to the center of the earth, heart, solar plexus, second chakra, first, down to the earth. They're showing me that even how you ground, Cassidy, the way you ground has been happening through the mind. And they're opening your ability to ground through the earth, through the body more. Of course, nothing is black and white. It's not that linear, but they're opening more of your capacity to ground through the viscera and the heart. This is a pretty deep spiritual thing happening through from the earth transmission. Okay, it's starting to complete now, so I can hear other things now. Right. So they want to say this. You having an awake mind that is aware of what is occurring does not stop what is occurring from occurring. What stops what is occurring from occurring in a spiritual context is you using your awake mind to stop what is occurring from occurring. So in other words, you can witness with your very, very alive mind, witness very consciously what is occurring, and that will not stop it. Does that make sense? So you don't have to be afraid of watching or knowing. And what you want to do is not have the mind then make a decision to interrupt the process. So surrender for one who has an active awake mind like yourself. This is how Katie, by the way, is able to be a healer, is her mind is wide awake while we are working her and changing her. Except for when it's not, except for when we shut it down to work on it. Point being, because she can witness and articulate what is occurring for her, she's a teacher. Same with you. Because you can witness what is occurring for you is a gift. That is a gift. Now, the challenge of that gift is to learn how to energetically step out of the way without mentally not seeing what is occurring. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. I'm chuckling only because something happened that I was able to witness and I have no idea what it was. And it was there was like a chunk moved and then a bunch of, and how I perceived it was a bunch of little images and words got shat out.
Yeah.
Like that were like a jumble in my sort of ADD brain. And literally I saw / heard perceived Walter Matthau, Stingray, Apple. And I just had to I did have to put a circle around it so that I could set that aside and report it later because it made me laugh.
That is hilarious.
Walter Matthau, Stingray, like I saw the ray in the water, like the flat fish thing, and then an apple. But why Walter Matthau? So I don't know what the fuck that means, but it was fun, and I just wanted to report it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Here's what's relevant with regard to the healing work we're doing for people to understand. You're describing exactly how it goes. Like a chunk is removed, and then things get shat out. And then those that space where the chunk was removed and things get shut out, whatever they may be, gets filled in with consciousness and light. And that's called healing from our perspective. So congrats on that. And sometimes how that will look for other people is we'll say this. Oftentimes the way it will look is an energetic chunk will pull out or move or release or something. And then people will have memories or childhood regression. They'll be like, oh, the time I was six with my dad on the beach. And then, and then we go, cool, see that, acknowledge it, release it. And then we fill it with light. And then the negative or limiting effects of that memory are no longer there. The chunk, as you say, that moved was the effects of the memory, the limiting effects of the memory. So why Walter Matthau Stingray Apple is that for you? I don't have access to that, but it's very funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't need an answer to the why on that one. I just was glad to see it and tag it.
Yeah, you don't sound like you do. I want one.
Well, again, because I'm trying not to let it be a brain experience. So yeah. I want to observe it, but I don't necessarily need to like break it into its component pieces and know it in my brain. I do kind of have a sense in my, I have a sensual, not sensory, but like a conceptual, non-verbal perception of what that means.
Cool. I have one now as well. So great. I feel satisfied. Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I totally do.
Okay, great.
Yeah. All right. We're running up on time.
Yes, so I was just going to say, does the earth have more to share? No. Are we complete for now? Yes. All right. So let me close the records of the earth. And, you know, this was really cool. And I want to thank the earth for being what it is and doing what you do and allowing us to see more clearly what's going on. What a gift. Thank you. I'm just grateful for that. Okay. So I want to thank the masters, teachers, and loved ones for their love and compassion. I want to thank the lords of the records for their point of view, and the Holy Spirit of light for all knowledge and healing. So you return the earth's energy to itself, return it to its complete physical earthly wholeness. The divine portal and the Akashic records of the earth, Sophia Gaia, are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic records of the earth are now closed. Amen. Divine portal and the Akashic records of the earth are now closed. Amen, amen, amen. Well, okay.
Yeah. I look forward to hearing this one since I didn't really hear it the first time. So interesting.
Yeah. I am even more tripped out than I was before we started. And I was already pretty far out. I'm going to have to go for a walk outside just to be like, what is a human body again? And do I have
one? Mm-hmm.
That was really interesting about all the stuff it was saying about that laughter. I just want to say this and then we can hang up. Is the laughter was really informative to me because it was like feeling the earth's soul laugh like that was like such a relief to the part of the psyche and the collective that's so worried about everything. The earth is not tripping. Not tripping at all.
Yeah. It's all our human experience and other like sentient life experience, the animal experience is being fucked, but the deeper consciousness concept of the earth is like, whatever, that's the 3D experience.
Yeah.
You can do better, but you know. That's hilarious. That's really right, wrong sized of you to think that you're going to destroy it.
Yes. Yeah, I think this episode needs to have right-sizedness in the title somewhere. Getting
right-sized candy bars. Yeah.
Getting right-sized or something like that. Anyway, thanks, you guys. That was cool.
That's great.
I guess we'll keep doing our work.
Do your work.
Bye.
Bye.
What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod, @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Well, it's more like we, after four sessions in a row with people, I'm so in another dimension. I'm like, let's just go right in the records. I'm ready for anything but here. So let me hit record.
That was a Sounds Awesome production.